This is a Jewish TV channel presentation. Welcome to Talking Point, where controversial subjects are brought into sharp focus. Conversations with JTVC show host Laura Kessler comes up next.
Good evening. Welcome to Talking Point. I'm Laura Kessler. The mission of Jewish TV channel and BIPAC News is to promote bipartisan voices working together to fight the AIM syndrome, anti-Semitism, Israel-phobia, and miseducation. Usually that's centered in academia and college campuses these days, but sadly it's also spread to medicine and healthcare, the subject of our interview today. The Hippocratic Oath is one of the most sacred oaths of any profession. The basic idea to do no harm and to recognize that sometimes, despite our best intentions, the remedy could possibly be worse than the original problem. We're used to applying this to drugs and surgical procedures, but not necessarily to social interactions or social justice. Perhaps we should be. One of the most disturbing trends over the years has been the increase of public hatred and anti-Semitism from doctors, not necessarily always in the medical room, but on their own time via social media in particular, which they don't even necessarily try to conceal. The first time I heard about contemporary medical anti-Semitism was in 2018, when a first-year medical resident from Cleveland Clinic was exposed and eventually fired after anti-Semitic tweets were discovered that included saying she was going to give her Jewish patients the wrong meds, calling them dogs, and other insults. She was banned from practicing medicine, but managed to get another job, yet was fired from that as well. There have been many other incidents, far too many to mention, that StopAntisemitism.org and others have revealed that many of the people ripping down the posters of innocent hostages are actually doctors and physicians and dentists. How can this come from a person committed to healing? Every patient should be asking this, and not just the Jewish patients. Luckily, there are Jewish doctors who are also asking the same question and doing something about it. Dr. Yael Hallis is recognized as one of the best facial plastic surgeons in New York. She's the daughter of Cuban and Argentine parents, and she uses her multicultural background and her liberal arts education to connect with international patients, and these communication skills also help her outside of the office as well. She's fully bilingual in English and Spanish and also conversational in Hebrew. That's quite a trio. And in the last 6 months, she's risen to become one of our great leaders tackling the concern of medical anti-Semitism through the formation of the brand new American Jewish Medical Association, which we talked about in the last episode. And I'm so glad to have her with us today. Welcome, Dr. Hallis.
Thank you. It's sad times, but an important conversation. So I appreciate you having me on today.
It's good to be with you, and we really appreciate it. I know your schedule is absolutely insane. As we're speaking, we've just come off of Passover. We're still in the midst of Passover, and there's a lot of crazy things happening at Columbia, your alma mater and mine. Let's just talk about the present moment and how you're affected by everything going on right now, because I know I am as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the parallels to the holiday of Passover and the pain and oppression of the Jewish people, and that once again we're fighting tremendous anti-Semitism, it's really truly sad times that have really shaken all of us in an existential way as to where we are in this universe. And if this is happening at our own alma maters in the United States, you know, and it's really happening around the globe, really, where are we safe? So it's been deeply, deeply disturbing. Columbia, as my alma mater, I was an art history major at the college, to see what really is are people who are striving for good, striving for education, but seem to be so unaware of their own really moral and ethical corruption by allowing hatred to the Jewish people persist. It's really, truly deeply disturbing and sad, profoundly sad to witness.
And it's coming from faculty, too, which is so shocking. I mean, how do you feel about that aspect?
Yeah, so, you know, that's, you know, part of the profoundness of this, and that's something that we're seeing in medicine as well, is that not only do we have the medical students being swayed, and that makes sense because people, you know, if they're learning this in K through 12, if they're learning this in college, and this whole ideology is being fostered and anti-Semitism being normalized, well, they're going to bring it to when they show up in medical school, which is so antithetical to the practice of medicine. You're literally supposed to be caring for humanity, all of humanity. So when you start dividing people into these groups and allowing hatred and dehumanization, it's profoundly frightening. But when you see it coming from faculty, when you see it coming from professors, from senior physicians, but we're seeing it really in all levels, in nursing and public health, when you're seeing people who are supposed to be the ones in charge and they're leading this bias, they're isolating the students, it just harkens back to, honestly, for us, in most recent memory, is Nazi Germany. And in Nazi Germany in 1938, you really saw physicians, it's so frightening, physicians, greater than 80% of physicians joined earlier and more than any other profession. And to see that occurring here is truly, truly frightening, and that people in positions of power, and who's in more power when you think about it, professors over their students, but doctors over their patients. You're so vulnerable as a patient. So mm-hmm. that's, you know, why it's just so profoundly disturbing. And, you know, like any disease in medicine that seeps in, the often analogy is a cancer, this has to be treated on such a profound and holistic way, because it's really affecting, contaminating the entire patient and our entire lives.
Yeah, you raised so many important points, and I think there was an article on your site by, I believe it was Sheldon, he really wrote extensively about the past and the Nazi collaboration. We discussed this with Beth Ron Reimer, too, in a previous episode. You know, people don't understand. It took the corruption of the medical class to make the Holocaust possible.
Exactly.
I mean, who do they think was doing the testing to find out exactly how much gas was necessary so they didn't waste any? You know, who did they think was doing this? I mean, it was, we think of it as just, oh, it's just Joseph Mengele. No, it was, as you said, 80%. And that sort of ties into a group think. You know, it's interesting. I actually taught a lot of doctors. For a while, I was teaching a lot of students from Northwestern medical communication. And I've noticed over the years that some of the people that are so technically brilliant, sometimes they just haven't been taught the soft skills. This goes for people in technology as well. Do you think there's something lacking in that background there that they ought to emphasize a little more? I mean, because, I mean, some doctors are great communicators, obviously, but not everyone is.
Yeah, well, you know, there has been a move in medicine, and indeed myself. I was an art history major. I was a liberal arts major, and the thought was to have people in medicine who could communicate better with patients. And there is a huge trend in medicine right now to examine health equity, social justice, to bring in some of these more liberal arts college type concepts and ideologies, which on the face seem like great ideas, because we do all want to be inclusive. We do want equal health outcomes for all of our patients. We want success for all of our patients. So if anything, I would say it's truly a sort of a lack of just education and knowledge. And that's really where all of this comes from, is when people are so stratified and not well-educated. There's so many people who just don't even understand what anti-Semitism even is. And it's just shocking, because you're taking people who are so well-educated, and that they would be so ignorant to history. You know, when you don't know history, you allow it to repeat itself. And there's just so many basic facts that you'd think people would know, but there is not consistent Holocaust education. A lot of the words that we've seen are being used incorrectly and just being hijacked in a way that just, so they kind of lose their meaning. And this just lack of education, lack of awareness of who the other is, that I would really say more as opposed to people being too scientific and too technical and, you know, not being able to communicate fully. I think the problem is just lack of awareness and knowledge, insight.
Yeah.
Even.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have a perfect background to do the work you're doing too, by the way, just in front of pulling everybody together. And I mean, it's so disheartening to see people that are, I mean, this is in many industries, you know, people that are the touchy-feely professions. You know, the life coaches are, It's just like they're pulled to this idea, the myth of the genocide, and it's just, it's like that trumps everything. And it doesn't matter how much data, how much facts, how much you pull out the statisticians. It's like, I feel like that's the one myth, the top piece of misinformation that we have to somehow disprove, but they're not responding to facts. we're in this other land of feelings.
Yeah, you really hit on so many things there. One of the examples of anti-Semitism that really struck a chord with me the most, though there's just so many examples throughout my field, is there's a psychologist in San Francisco who told his elderly patient, who herself is a Holocaust survivor, when she worked up the comfort to disclose that she lived through the Holocaust, said, well, you need to be on antipsychotic medications because the Holocaust never occurred.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Nope. Not kidding.
This is a psychologist? He's still
licensed? This is a psychologist in Northern California.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And you brought up the example of that physician in Cleveland, but we're seeing so many examples of people calling to eliminate Zionists from healthcare. Eliminate Zionism from healthcare. There's one, and again, you mentioned there's a site that's listing so many of these egregious examples. A doctor calling, wishing that all Zionists were dead, then she won't rest until they are. Well, that's a problem when you're a doctor, because you could be affecting.
Yeah. The problem if you're anybody, but especially a doctor. I mean, like, as a patient, like, how do you find out who these people are so you can avoid them? Is it even possible? I mean, I doubt that's going to be on their health grade site.
I don't think it's going to be on the health grade site. There are a number of sites that are posting. We have a cycle that they're posting, and then people are complaining about that they're being doxxed. I always go back to this quote from Hillel, from Perkei Avot, which is, do unto others as you do on yourself. That's the entire Torah. The rest is commentary. We can't forget, on either side, our humanity, our shared goal. And we're spending so much time on this hatred, and we could be spending so much time on scientific advancements. Instead of, boycotting each other, we could be listening to each other and making the world a better place. It's literally, that is our jobs. That's, one of the things that is just so deeply, deeply disturbing to me is we could be learning and we could be growing and we could be seeing the beauty in of our world and of science. And it's really, it's incredibly disturbing to all of us.
It's so ironic.
I think that's why. Yeah.
It's so ironic that they accuse us of doxing, of Islamophobia in some cases, when we're just simply responding and fighting back against anti-Semitism, when actually I know for a fact a group of social workers and psychologists in Chicago particularly were recently doxxed, which for anyone who doesn't know, that's when they expose your public data, your phone number, your address, so that you can presumably be harassed. That's what doxing is. And it's macro gaslighting. That's what it is. And that has another level of just psychological torture. I want to talk about that, but I want to just go back to the beginning, because it's sort of surprising to me that there was not previously an American Jewish Medical Association before, and I'm very glad that there is one now. But just take us back to October 7th and how, I know it's been just a whirlwind for you, but we're really glad you're doing it. Just take what happened. How did it get started?
So many of us were profoundly disturbed by the events of October 7th, and like many of my colleagues, I wanted to do something, and a close colleague said, we should do something. So I said, all right. I actually just created a WhatsApp group with a couple of hundred physicians, which quickly mushroomed to over 1,000. And from there, just with those conversations, it realized how desperately we needed a sense of community and a voice, and that we didn't have one. There are so many different types of medical associations, religious, ethnic-based. There's a Catholic Medical Association, a Palestinian American Medical Association, and many more. But there wasn't one for the American Jewish medical, and really everyone in healthcare. There isn't one for nursing. We're currently serving as a home for nurses and social workers, and I mean even veterinarians, PTs, healthcare administrators, dentists. There was no common voice. And when you don't have a voice, you can't protest and see the changes that are going on. And you can't educate others. I must believe, and I know that there are still are on every side of the aisle and of every background, there are good, decent people who care about our common mission to care for humanity. But there wasn't anyone speaking from our voice to make sure that well-intentioned or ill-intentioned people, players, weren't steering things in a direction which was going to culminate into truly anti-Semitic and horrific behavior.
And that's remarkable. That's because so many Jewish people embody the spirit of Tikkun Olam, which is healing the world. And I think we sort of have a collective cobbler syndrome. We're so good at helping everybody else, we forget that we're very much a community that can be vulnerable as well. So, I mean, the one silver lining.
Great analogy.
Is at least we're waking up to that, unfortunately. But fortunately, there are some silver linings, at least for that.
So we do have this strong sense of community, and I think that was one of the first, just most important roles that we played. And then there's so much, really education and standardization and understanding and outreach, because really, as I said earlier, education is really the only way that can defeat this. And there are partners that do want to work with us, and it's just so important. Because there even are people who are would be horrified to know that they are guilty of anti-Semitism, but just don't even realize. And I think that's what we've gone through when we look at the history of racism, of misogyny, that it's really when you have education, when you know and can appreciate what individuals of a group can do, and really you don't view people as a group, you view them as individuals, as humans, then you can really move past this. And we have urgent work to do, urgent work. And I really encourage everyone, if any doctor you know, any nurse you know, medical student, healthcare administrator, public health, vets, dentists, oral surgeons, to reach out to us at BAJMA, to become a partner, become a member, so that we can, tikkun olam, we really need to heal our world right now. It's in a scary place.
And retired doctors can participate,
absolutely,
too, right?
Absolutely. They are a wonderful group. All of our retired healthcare professionals have been amazing and really have wonderful brains. And it's certainly a never-ending hobby, unfortunately, fighting anti-Semitism.
You know, I've had a theory for several years. I really wish that our retirees, the boomers especially, because there's so many of them and they have so much energy, I wish they would come out for one last hurrah, because that is who's keeping us together right now. When they're gone, when the moderate boomers are gone, it's going to be really scary to be here. I'm not trying to doom and gloom. It's just the normal order of things. And we really need to turn this around. I said for a while, I used to say we have 10 to 15 years. I'm not even sure we have 10 years. This has happened way faster than my worst imagination. And, you know, we all need to work together and look at the facts. And I want to get really specific, since you're here with us. You know, when we first spoke, you said it was just everywhere in the journals. And, you know, obviously the average person does not read medical journals and things like that. And we don't have access to your forums and things. But I do understand that the main medical journal for your profession, it's called The Lancet. And they were given a statement published by 2,700 doctors that they ultimately did not publish, thankfully, because 45,000 had another statement competing with it. Can you tell us what exactly that was about, and how have the medical journals and the periodicals become politicized and affected by this war specifically?
There's a lot to talk about, and that's really one very active area for many of our members, especially those in academia, is the bias that you see in the articles, in scholarly articles and quasi-scholarly articles coming out. The Lancet is the main, it's the British equivalent to our New England Journal of Medicine. I would say that's the main medical journal in the United States. The Lancet is that internationally in Britain. The British Medical Journal has also had a significant amount of very biased, questionable data being published. And when you put the imprimatur of a well-known and well-respected journal on one of your articles, it unfortunately carries a lot of weight. And very honestly, Jews are outnumbered. It's a very small percentage of the world population. And so when you have so many of these articles coming out, flooding these journals, and the fact that they're accepting them, and is really, and we've seen it at every single conflict that Israel has gone through, and particularly with Gaza over the past few decades, that Richard Horton, who is the editor of The Lancet, was actually accused of anti-Semitism by his own daughter, who asked, "Daddy, why do you hate Jewish people so much?" That he actually went on a trip to Israel so that he could understand better, actually, what he was allowing to be published. And since that time, there's been, yes, absolutely. And he went to Gaza, too, and he commented that there were portraits of Osama bin Laden in some of the clinics that he was going to. So his eyes were open to the fact that there can be political bias and hijacking of the medical field. So since that time, there has been, it's still outnumbered, it's still outbalanced or unbalanced, but we have a number of our physicians have published letters in responsa to The Lancet, and The Lancet also came out with a commission, which the timeliness was really around the same time, was in October, The Lancet Commission on the Holocaust, of which several of our members were part of that commission, talking about the importance of learning the lessons of the Holocaust for all medical practitioners so as not to repeat the mistakes that were made. And unfortunately, so many people think that they've learned it because they've watched a TikTok video. But again, the lack of education, the lack of understanding nuance, and that's one of the keys of medicine, is to, you have to have critical thinking. You have to, you know, understand dual processes. Your differential diagnosis can't be one thing. And that's what we see again and again being lost. Justice, bias, and, you know, articles coming out that seem like they're so intelligent and they're coming from respectable public health figures, but they're so biased and it's so clearly they have an agenda that there is no meaningful data there, and it's just propaganda.
Exactly. I was always taught in communication in debate to use their arguments against them because that's their love language, so to speak. And so, you know, if it's human rights, if it's empathy, then the question is, why aren't they showing any empathy for the hostages? Why are the hostages not even mentioned, not even in the conversation half the time? It's this group, Doctors Against Genocide. They were protesting at a Holocaust museum, and they've done,
yeah.
I mean, is that the main group? But can you tell our audience a little bit about that? I think there's more than one. I think they're not the only one, are they? Like, who are these people?
No, there's a number. Perhaps they are all fundamentally connected to each other, but I believe Doctors Against Genocide, I believe that's a group that also just started right after October 7th by a physician in Michigan. You know, what a noble sounding name, like Jewish Voices for Peace. You know, I'm a Jewish voice for peace. So it's kind of grandiose names, but what is it actually signifying, and who's actually, you know, creating the rhetoric and the agenda?
Let me just cut in, and for our audience who isn't familiar, Jewish Voice for Peace is a, I'm being diplomatic here, it's a tokenist organization, many of which are not even Jewish, that basically exist purely to destroy Israel. that's the short of it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So a very large name. You know, they honestly, that group should have been around for Rwanda and for the Holocaust. That would have been great.
Exactly.
For Rwanda would have been great. Not much was said about the millions of children in Yemen, but seems to have just come in October, and the only genocide that they're calling a genocide is the tragic war in Gaza. So that's disturbing when you, and again, you see that adoption of these grandiose names and grand titles, but is just singularly focused in a way that doesn't truly honor the victims and the memories of the victims of what's going on, and doesn't speak to ultimately what should be peace and how are we going to coexist and how should we coexist.
Well, and false statistics too, because when you go from 700,000 Palestinians in 1948 to almost 5.5 million now, that number went up. It didn't go down. That's not how genocide works. How genocide works is when there are 2 million fewer Jews today in 2024 than there were 100 years ago. We still haven't caught up to the numbers we had before the Holocaust. That's how a real genocide works. If they really cared, why weren't they there for Syria? Why aren't they there for the Uyghur Muslims, you know, as you said?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I'm a physician. That is the tragedy of this world, is that there are so many people who are suffering, and we could be doing so much about it. The argument may be, you know, this is the one that they're choosing to work on, but all lives, as you were saying, you know, if you're going to be talking about Gaza, speak about the hostages, because all lives, if you're going to try to understand a situation, it takes understanding of both sides of the issue. And again, that speaks to the complexities of medicine and the real, true calling of medicine, again, for all humanity.
Well, and I know some of your organization wanted to go and help people in this process. And there are Jewish doctors in Israel. They will treat Palestinians. They've even treated terrorists. I mean, they're truly upholding the oath. That's what doctors are supposed to do, not protest at a Holocaust museum. I never understood exactly what happened.
I know that their initial call to protest at the Holocaust museum was canceled because there was such a public outcry of what a terrible idea that was. But I think there was another, protesters did eventually show up at the Holocaust Museum. But that specific original call that came to light, that original one was canceled because it was just a terrible idea.
So we've been hearing some especially crazy things coming out of the medical schools at the University of California. And everybody knows that California sets trends in education at every level. That's why groups like Amcha Initiative have done reports about this to really help stop these toxic ideologies from spreading. Can you go through specifically what you've seen and heard at these UC campuses particularly or other campuses where it's specifically going on at the medical schools?
Yeah, well, we're seeing it in medical schools throughout the country. There have been issues at Harvard, at Brown, University of Illinois, Chicago, Georgetown. It's really GW, it's really everywhere. But California certainly has been the most egregious, and particularly UCLA has most recently been in the news. But we have seen it from UCLA, UCSD, UCSF has been particularly vicious. So it's really disturbing to see how many examples, virulent examples, there's been in the UC system. And what are some of them? Two incidents that were recently publicized and very disturbing. One was some UCLA psychiatrists who were trying to state that self-immolation, committing suicide, shouldn't be viewed as a mental disorder, which is, I mean, more than somewhat disturbing because the goal of a psychiatrist is to keep your patient from committing suicide. So that was extremely disturbing. And they were talking about Aaron Bushnell, who self-immolated and wrote a letter saying that it was due to the war in Gaza. There was a number of lectures related to UCLA's DEI first-year medical school training that crossed over into anti-Semitism and just a total lack of understanding that Jews are a culture, a people, a religion, as well as a lecturer who actually came in fully covered in keffiyehs, only the eyes exposed throughout the entire lecture, and was shouting Free Palestine in the middle of the lecture. So those two were extremely well publicized as well on the campus, having a pig statue and labeling that as that was supposed to be representing Jews. So
this is in the first year student's medical lecture, a pig statue.
The pig statue was on UCLA campus, just on the campus.
Okay.
Just.
But I mean, and that.
Yeah, I don't know if that merits a just. That's pretty awful. But we see biased statements from many of UCSD, UCSF, their pediatrics departments, family medicine departments out of UCLA Harbor campus. Just one-sided statements about the war in Israel and Gaza, and not mentioning the hostages, not understanding, again, what is basic and inherent is to understand both sides of the issue. You're not going to solve a cure disease or solve a problem if you only see one aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, and as you said earlier, it's critical thinking has to be able to look at everything objectively with the same criteria, not two different sets of criteria. Seems like there's always this double standard, very blatant. And it also seems like it's systemic, not just in medicine, but certainly also in medicine. You know, we're just talking about what's happening lately. As I was getting ready to speak with you, there were things I didn't realize. I didn't understand that there had been a big spectacle at Emory University, according to the ADL, the dental school from like the 1940s to the 60s. 65% of Jewish students at Emory's dental school were flunked out unfairly or forced to repeat one or more years. And they finally made amends with that in the 90s. I mean, that's a pretty big thing. And there have been other things. The Simon Wiesenthal Center has published some things about Tufts Dental School. I don't know what's up with the dentist. It's just systemic. There's an ideology that trickles down. It's very disturbing that kids are getting all this stuff from TikTok and Instagram. But I also feel like that's not by coincidence. There's something trickling down from other sources, too, that need to be examined.
No, there's terrible hatred. There was an incident at the Emory Medical School. And that's part of the problem that we're seeing is that the schools themselves aren't enforcing their own policies. And I mentioned it before with the dress code and a lot of these institutions. But, you know, Emory had an instance where an MD PhD student wrote a 4-page tirade and sent it to the med school listserv. That's against policy. It's this impossibility to enforce rules and standards, and it just seems to always be going against Jews. And you mentioned the past. You know, there used to be quotas. Jews were not allowed into medical schools in large numbers. And even where I went to Cornell for medical school, had a quota and really was not allowing more than a handful or a couple of Jews per year. And unfortunately, that's sort of what we're seeing again. We are seeing drastic reductions in the amount of Jewish students being admitted to medical schools. And besides the blatant hatred, this kind of winnowing of Jews away from education and positions of stature, again, also deeply troubling. And you said it's some fundamental root cause underneath all of it. Yeah, there is hatred.
And it comes down to how do we fight this? I mean, people can write petitions. That's important. You don't have to be able-bodied marching in a big crowded public place to make a difference. You can sign petitions and write letters to your congressman from the privacy of your home. I mean, that's the beauty of the internet. That's what I am pulling for. One last great hurrah from our retirees, because we don't have the numbers without them, and they're a gigantic generation and they're educated and they know. But, you know, it also begs the people on the front lines, and this is the teachers, certainly. We know that the Jewish studies teachers have not lived up to expectations and hopes. Some of them are part of the problem, promoting anti-Zionism, which has contributed to this. And, you know, people can listen to previous interviews to get all the specifics on that. But how are Jewish doctors reacting to this? What can they do? I mean, that's got to be tense when you're there at a hospital or a healthcare situation, and it could be, I don't know, is it colleagues? Is it patients? Is it, I imagine it's coming from all different angles. Like, how can people specifically deal with it from within? Because I know a lot of people are going to agree with this, but they're going to say, I don't know, I feel helpless. How do I get involved? How do I do that?
Yeah. So that's why our organization is so important, because sometimes people feel isolated and alone, and they need an organization to help stand behind them because they're fearing retribution from professors, from colleagues, from administration. We can come in, and that's one of the reasons why we're working with all of the medical schools and soon all the nursing schools to make sure that they really have a robust program, just as they have so many robust programs. Making sure that they are inclusive and diverse populations. Well, make sure that you are standing up against anti-Semitism the same you would for any other hatred. And we have not, you're right, we have not been active before. We can't allow that. So no one can, and be it signing petitions, be it joining, if you're in healthcare, joining our group so that you can sign with petitions, have Jewish cultural events, have a Jewish employee resource group, or a medical school chapter, so that you can have a place to, you know, it doesn't always have to be fighting a negative, but educating and enjoying and celebrating your culture. And we cannot, even though we are small, we cannot be forgotten and we cannot be erased.
Yeah.
And to do that, having an organization standing together, we have had many resources and ways to make that happen. And we can make a difference. I really think it's a hallmark of a healthy society, how well they treat their minorities. And as we know, anti-Semitism, Jews are often the canaries in the coal mine. And when you're seeing anti-Semitism flaring to this level, you're seeing a true threat to democracy and the health of the society. So join together as much as you possibly can. Yes, the retirees can be wonderful. Join. We have so many different ways that you can participate. And then, as we were saying before, join your local board of ed, join your local government. You have to be in it to win it. You have to be in it to understand what's going on.
For a regular person or a patient listening to this, people are going to have concerns, understandably, how they can protect themselves. And, I mean, I actually know two people putting off surgery right now because they're afraid of anti-Semitism. And I know women who have taken Ashkenazi heritage off of their medical charts and just maybe gotten genetic testing on their own. What would you tell them? What do you think of patients who are afraid to share their religion and their healthcare file? How can they potentially have an uncomfortable conversation with the doctor if necessary?
That is really the hardest question, and it is so painful to hear. I will still say that the vast majority of my fellow healthcare providers would be horrified to think that they are not taking care of patients the way that they should. One, you need to find a provider who you are comfortable with. I mean, that is always the case. I refuse to give up on optimism and in believing in my colleagues. So first and foremost, find a doctor that you truly feel comfortable with, because if you're not comfortable and you're not disclosing, you're not going to have good health care. So there still are many wonderful practitioners, clinicians out there. And you need to join our organization and speak up. Patients, lay people can absolutely help fight anti-Semitism in healthcare. If you notice a problem, then by all means, report it. It has to be reported. You don't know to cure a problem if you don't know about the problem and all the symptoms and signs of it. So that I would come forward. If you do experience something, do not be silent. Because as we know in medicine, if you are silent and you do not treat something, it will only get worse.
I believe you guys have been working with the Anti-Defamation League as well, right?
We've been working with all of the major associations and legacy Jewish foundations, ADL, AJC, Stand With Us, Combat Anti-Semitism Movement and Network. Everyone is really at capacity and just knowing that they have to do even more.
What is the one thing you want people to do? Can you give them your website?
Yes. Go to www.theajma.org, and you'll find a lot of resources there and can always reach out and contact us.
And I think by the time this posts, you're going to have a new website, and you have a special initiative coming up in May, don't you? Celebrating Jewish medicine?
Yes, May is Jewish American Heritage Month, and we have created a series of information, a doctor, physician, scientist for every day of the month, and we have a number of excellent webinars coming up, including one on long-term underground captivity, unfortunately, with the Hostage Forum from Israel, to really explore and understanding the medical needs of this hostage captive population, and also an interesting webinar coming up on truly what happens in Israel medicine. Israel actually has an almost 50-50 representation between Jews and Muslims in their healthcare. They really do a much better job, actually, at coexisting, apparently, than we've been doing.
It's amazing. Wow, I am just so grateful that you're doing the work you're doing, and I hope people come out and help you, and I know you're going to have a lot of great resources, so we really appreciate if you have time for this, a really nano-quick lightning round, and we'll wrap up, okay?
So, yeah.
Why are you proud to be a Jew?
I'm proud to be a Jew because we have a long history of tikkun olam, caring for others, saving lives, and it is such a rich intellectual history that brings me pride every day.
Who are your Jewish role models?
First Jewish role model is going to be Maimonides. a true intellectual, an incredible physician, one who had strong Jewish values, but also appreciated Aristotle and in the Muslim world that he was living in. So I would say Maimonides, and there are so many mentors that I have, that strong Jews in the medical field that have taught me so much. And I mean, if you just look at the list of Nobel Prize winners, there's just so many Jews that have contributed to the betterment of this world.
Yeah. What concerns you most about the present moment in relation to the Jewish people?
The dehumanization that we're seeing of the Jewish people, because that is truly the last step that's needed before you actually see extinguishing of life. And it pains me to see that amongst any group, and the lack of ability to coexist, or just even for lack of dialogue, but fundamentally, existentially, the risk to the Jewish people is what concerns me the most.
What makes you mad?
What makes me mad? What makes me mad is injustice. Injustice makes me really mad.
For those who look up to you, what do you want them to remember?
For those who look up to me, I hope that they will see that I do passionately fight for the well-being of all humanity and do not rest, and really want the best for this world and for everyone on this world.
And finally, what's your outlook on the future? Are you hopeful?
I'm extremely cautiously optimistic, because if we don't have that optimism, what is going to push us forward to do better every day? And if we don't have that optimism, right, Hatikva, then how are we going to be able to transmit light and bring goodness into this world? So we cannot give up that hope.
Dr. Yael Halas, thank you so much for your time and for everything you and the AJMA are doing. And good luck with everything. And please keep in touch with us and let us know how we can help.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this edition of Talking Point. Visit our social media, subscribe to our list, and tune in next time as we interview more heroes who are fighting the AIM syndrome, anti-Semitism, Israelphobia, and miseducation. For Jewish TV Channel and BIPOC News, I'm Laura Kessler. Stay safe and see you next time.